Hello and welcome to this edition of ITR Voices. Joining me is Karine Halimi-Guez, Managing Director of Tax at the US headquartered delivery services company, FedEx. Hi, Karine, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Alice. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. And so today, as we've discussed, we're going to focus on cross-functional tax projects and the role that tax teams can play in the wider business.
Well, you know, I think we've been saying for many years now that tax people need to be in the business, right? And it sounds very cliche to say that. And I can tell you, I know a lot of tax people who say, oh, yeah, I'm definitely completely involved in the business. I'm not that sure. And actually, the reason why I'm saying this is I think it's actually not enough. Tax people should not be just involved in the business. I think they can play a big role in actually driving the business. And why do I think that? Is I believe it's not only good for tax people to be more immersed and driving, playing a driving role in the business. But it's also actually good for the business. I do believe that good tax people have an helicopter view of the business that few functions actually have. If you're a generalist, you know, working in a multinational company as a tax person, you're going to touch upon very different areas of the business. You're going to be involved in M&A. You're going to be involved in corporate restructurings. You're going to be involved in launch of business products, new products. You're going to be involved in billing questions, you know, if you're also dealing with indirect taxes, for example, et cetera, et cetera. So that kind of profile actually, you know, can become a very cross-functional, or can have a pretty good helicopter view, as I said, of the business. And I think that we should cultivate this cross-functional approach. And this is not always the case within the tax function, either because people kind of fear getting too much involved in or even drive cross-functional projects because tax people believe they're not knowledgeable enough to be able to do that. Or sometimes, I must confess, there may be some, I don't know, is there an ego thing or maybe a lack of interest because this is not my responsibility. I'm a tax person. Well, I think we should go beyond this kind of thinking, which is very old-fashioned in my view. And I think we should do that first because driving cross-functional projects when you're a tax person is a great way to be developed. It gets you out of your ivory tower. It gets you to develop your leadership skills beyond the traditional technical knowledge that tax people are very much recognized for. And that can only make them better tax people in the end. You know, let's stop being tax nerds. Let's become tax leaders. And that is a great being, having such an experience is a great way to become a better tax leader. But that's not also positive for tax people. I think it's also positive on the business side. It also increases the acceptance and the support by the business of tax projects or projects that may have a tax flavor, even if it's not the only flavor of it. It unlocks resources. It's going to drive increased recognition for tax employees, maybe even potentially creating career opportunities outside of tax. And I think that is a good thing because it's always good to pollinize. It's always good, you know, the more tax people, moving, stepping outside of tax and taking responsibilities in more, operational or finance, broader finance functions, etc. I think this can only be good for tax and also for the business. So it's a win-win, and we should push for more of that.
Absolutely. That cross-functional collaboration is really important, isn't it? And can you give us an example of a tax project maybe that ultimately does ripple out and affect the rest of the business?
Yeah, I mean, let's think about something that will resonate with many tax people, analyzing the substance requirements of a principal structure. We all know when you set up a principal structure, one of your top tax concern is to ensure that that principle is not going to be challenged from a substance perspective. You want to make sure that the business setup is consistent with the fact that you have identified a principle at a certain location. And in order to do that, tax people will go through the traditional DMPI analysis and identify what positions need to be located at the principal's location to make sure that indeed we do have the required substance there. Where tax people see only DMPI functions analysis, you know, the very, again, tax nerdy technical analysis, the reality is this is much bigger than that. Because deciding who needs to be located, which functions need to be located at which location, have an impact on functional org design. And ultimately, it also has an impact on people's lives with respect to where they and their family may be based. So if you're going through this kind of changes, especially when you transition from one model to another, so from a previous model that did not require all these, that did not trigger all these requirements from a location perspective, or if you're going through significant business adjustments, business changes, transformations, like, for example, major acquisitions, well, this becomes especially acute. So when you face such an analysis, and again, as a tax person, you're going to go through your DMPI technical analysis and get to the conclusion who needs to sit at the principal location, you have two options. You can take the old-fashioned arm-twisting approach, saying, this is what we need to do. This is a tax requirement, and it's not non-negotiable. So if you know, talking to a person who is in scope of that DMPI analysis, if you want the job, you have to relocate, non-negotiable. I will not comment on the lack of empathy that this approach shows, although I do believe that empathy is a topic that we should talk more about within multinationals, and maybe that's very much of a female vibe, which maybe we can explore later in our podcast. So I will not comment on the lack of empathy that this behavior shows, but I believe from a very practical perspective, this does not work. This does not work for two reasons. First, on the short term, it's going to create tensions because tensions in how to fill in key roles, because your talent pools may not be located at the place of the principal because of historical reason. Because again, if you're going through a major transformation, if you've been through a major acquisition, you may have several talent pools, and maybe not all of them, or neither, or very few of them are actually in the right place. So short term, it's going to create tensions. But even if, let's assume that on the short term, you can convince people to move to the location, longer term, you will face what I believe is the biggest transfer pricing risk a company may face, which is that the business may end up circumventing the tax model and create a disconnect between the tax setup and the business reality. If your talent pools, if your stars are not in the right place, at some point, functional VPs, functional leaders are going to say, well, sorry, the right people, the people that I need for that position are not in this country. So, you know, they're going to start, you know, peeling the onion. Oh, can we have an exception? And then another exception. And this is where you start having a growing disconnect between what you were trying to achieve from a tax perspective versus what the business really wants. So that's why if you look at all these issues and constraints and risks, actually, I think there's a better approach to it. There's another approach, which is to try to make it a win-win. A win-win by identifying the tax must-haves versus the nice-to-haves. And where possible, insert flexibility. And when we went through such an analysis, we ended up creating the concept of commuters. Basically, what it means is we do not need people to relocate and become local tax residents. Because honestly, what they do during the weekend, where their family is based, is none of our business. But we need them to be present a minimum number of days per week at a certain location. And that's where the cross-functional aspect kicks in. Again, as a tax person, you're going to be very comfortable defining the must-have versus the nice-to-have from a tax technical perspective. Again, DMP function analysis. And this is where most tax people are going to stop. They make their analysis and they will say, okay, this is what we need. And that's what you're going to have to somehow make work for the business. But these are our requirements. And this is where I'm saying, do not stop there. Go further than that. Once you have analyzed the must-have versus the nice-to-have, well, work with HR. Help them design a policy that is at the same time tax compliant, but also manageable from an HR perspective in terms of, administrative management and in terms of cost. Then go even one step further than that. Become a salesman. Take this policy, take this tax analysis and sell it to the business functions. Go and talk to each functional leader and explain them why we're doing this, why it's kind of a good, it's really a win-win type of approach for the function and for the business because it's a way, and for tax, sorry, because it's a way to support an optimal tax setup while providing flexibility for their own organization. Then go even one step further. Create the processes, the procedures, the controls to make sure that the rules continue to be respected. We do believe, we do count on people to be serious about it, to take it seriously, and to do the right thing. And usually that's what happens. If you need to involve in ultimately, for example, internal audit, to also pass on the message that, guys, we are serious about it. Yes, we provide flexibility, but you need to play the game. And we will ensure through an internal audit review that, yes, you do respect the processes. You do spend the number of days that we need you to spend at the appropriate location, etc. Trust me, if you involve internal audit, everybody starts listening. Nobody wants to fail an internal audit review. So if you do it this way, like you manage flexibility, but at the same time, yeah, there are some constraints, but you know, you try to make them more manageable for the function, then I think tax is seen as a facilitator. It is seen then as a pragmatic function who understands business constraints and who tries to, accommodate them while being tax compliant, as opposed to being really an obstacle and a very rigid function that may be seen really as an obstacle to business agility. That's not a good place to be in. So going through this process, pushing people, tax people, to take the lead on this type of cross-functional analysis. Don't stop at the tax analysis level. Go beyond that. Sell it. Sell your setup to the business leaders. I think this is how you end up with, again, this win-win approach that at the same time respects the tax requirements, but also shows that you are considerate for the business constraints.
Absolutely. Some really important points there. And you mentioned earlier the question of where employees are living and where they're working. And these questions are obviously particularly timely at the moment with COVID-19. So what are your thoughts on how the pandemic has affected these questions?
Yeah, a lot of thoughts and a lot of impacts. Obviously, going back to what I was describing, this commuter approach, for example, for Dempy analysis. Well, you know, travels are suspended nowadays. So the very basic assumption of the commuter setup is out of the window nowadays. So the travel constraints do trigger carry a lot of challenges to the traditional tax analysis. But it's not just, I mean, the principal type of analysis, the substance analysis that I've just referred to, is just one example. I think there's many other impacts. And we've been reading in the press, in the literature, or from, governments releasing news that they understand the current situation as being totally exceptional. But I must confess that while I have seen these kind of statements being released for personal income tax, where you do have commuters, like something very frequent in Europe, people commuting within the Benelux or between, France and Switzerland, or, central Europe the commuter approach is a very common, a very frequent approach. So tax authorities did say, don't worry, we understand the situation, it's quite exceptional, and we will not change your personal income tax set up because of that. We have also seen clarifications issued by the OECD around permanent establishments, because you have people working from different countries. They may be salespeople. They may be contracting on behalf of their organization, and they do that from where they live, which may be a different country. Do we end up with a PE there? And again, the OECD clarified that, because we believe this is an exceptional setup and it's not supposed to be a long-lasting setup, and maybe there's going to be some adjustments there, because obviously the work from home now has lasted more than anyone really ever expected. But their initial clarification was no PEs will be triggered by that. However, I haven't seen anything with reference to corporate income tax. And the particular substance analysis that I've just talked about, the DMP analysis. So there is a short-term question about that. I think even longer term, I think there's going to be really a growing disconnect between the traditional tax substance tests and the revolution of working from home. Everybody says, we all know this is here to stay. So what does that mean for the traditional substance analysis from a tax perspective? Does it mean that those involved in DMPI functions will face location constraints that are otherwise lifted for many others? I don't know. If you think even beyond that, think about, all the discussion around digitalization of tax. And can we even think that, the move towards customers as becoming the ultimate value driver, does that signal the end of the DMP concept And does it mean that, you know, all these constraints about where people are located will somehow end up being lifted, which would be a good thing, again, seeing the new world we live in and everybody, you know, talking about, oh, yeah, working from home is a great opportunity that opens up, you know, more, a bigger, broader talent pool because you don't have to be located exactly where the office is. I fully agree with that. There are still a lot of questions at the moment you cross a border. And especially if those people, the people that we're talking about, may be involved in this kind of DEMPI function analysis. So really a Pandora's box has opened with COVID-19, but also with the digitalization of tax. I guess the future will tell, but that's a very relevant point indeed.
Absolutely. And what about corporate restructuring? So this is another example of a project that becomes about so much more than tax.
Definitely. And this is a topic that is very, very dear to my heart. Why? Because I've especially, I mean, personally been through this and still going through this experience of really global tax restructurings and what they really mean for the company. So if you to start off with, I think corporate restructurings have usually typically a pretty strong legal and tax flavor because you're going to structure your organization for operating for the purpose of operating models and intercompany flows or to protect tax or legal attributes. And that's what it comes with, right? People, when you start talking corporate restructuring, everybody will have this the red flag in their mind, oh, tax and legal nerdy thing. However, you soon realize that the legal and tax component is actually minimal in corporate restructurings. My experience is maybe they represent 20-30% of the work, and usually, in my view, not the most difficult. Typically, when you go through this type of corporate, large, significant, global corporate restructurings, your headaches are going to arise from HR because you're moving people between entities. And sometimes these people have different terms and conditions. So that creates HR issues. IT, oh my God, IT. In the end, everything boils down to IT. You need to adjust all your systems. And trust me, IT resources are very scarce and in very high demand. So IT is going to be a big roadblock on your road to the corporate restructuring. Commercial, you're going to need to change customer facing documents. You're going to need to change customer contracts. So all of a sudden you find yourself discussing with sales and marketing. What about the brand, the name of the entity, etc. Finance, this is maybe a more comfortable area for tax people, but still way beyond the traditional tax remit because you're going to have to adjust all your systems interfaces. You're going to have to adjust your ERP. You're going to have to adjust your processes, your procedures, because you're dealing with different entities that may not have had at the time of the legal combination aligned processes and harmonized procedures. So once you combine those entities, you're going to be forced to also combine the processes and the procedures. So, you know, when you hear all that, there's two key takeaways that you need to be aware of before you engage in massive global restructurings. First, you'd rather have a strong political support because you're going to need to prioritize resources, whether those resources are dollars for pro fees or hands, because you're going to need, you know, bodies to work on this project. And you need to have a strong political sponsor who really believes in the project and who's ready to put his or her neck on the line to push it forward. But the other also takeaway is you cannot root corporate restructurings only in tax and legal, because the cross-functional impacts are simply too broad and too heavy. And you cannot afford to disturb operations. Can you imagine the impact of IT systems not connecting anymore and all of a sudden your business stops? You know, that is to me, that would be my nightmare. So massive corporate restructurings absolutely need to be anchored as business projects. Yes, again, immediate reaction is, oh, tax and legal nerdy alert. It is not. And you're going to have to go through this process of education and rallying support from the business in order to make it happen. First, because, again, corporate simplifications, even if you may have had some tax, some brilliant tax planning in mind when you engaged in that project, corporate simplifications also trigger typically substantial SG&A savings. So even if, you know, setting aside the tax or legal motivation, there is a business motivation to do that, because it's a good thing. It's good housekeeping to simplify your corporate structure. There's a Deloitte study that says that as we increase the number of entities per tranche of billion of revenue, the more entities you have, the more costly your finance function is going to be, your HR function is going to be. For example, from a finance perspective, the cost of the finance function may increase from 1.1% of the revenue, which is probably best in class type of finance cost, and grow to 1.7-1.8% of the revenue, which is definitely not best in class. So by playing with the number of legal entities that you have in your structure, you trigger a business impact that translates into SG&A savings. So it is definitely impactful for the business. If you conduct those corporate restructuring in the midst of a large acquisition, well, you will see that it's an extremely powerful tool to push the integration forward, because it forces people to step out of their comfort zone, of their business as usual processes, and it will force them to integrate. And you will see also that from a people perspective, it will be seen as a major people event, because you're putting everyone under one roof. And with that, you'll foster a sense of belonging. And you know that from when you go through major acquisitions, well, that's a key thing. How do you combine the people from legacy A versus legacy B? How do you combine them so that they all feel part of one single same group? Well, putting everybody in one legal entity, trust me, going through that process, would it be just the way of working together to make that happen, is extremely powerful tool. Also, given the massive cross-functional ramifications, so, you know, you cannot, and that's more of a kind of a, as a conclusion you know, after what we've discussed, is you cannot conduct these type of restructurings in isolation as tax or legal projects. You need to have full support and involvement from the business. You need to create cross-functional teams in every country being impacted on top of a centralized coordinating function. So you need to have that support. And if you're able to do that, the teamwork that you're going to generate is amazing. It's extremely powerful. leading a project like this is going to test your leadership skills to its extreme. But if you manage to get through the breaking point, and if you manage to rally support, you will create pride within the team working on the project, and they will develop an incredible sense of ownership because they actually see how impactful a project like this is. And developing that kind of feeling within a team, as broad as it can be, because we're talking multiple countries and multiple functions, I can tell you, you can move mountains when you manage to create that those kind of feelings. And trust me, going through a global corporate restructurings is definitely tantamount to moving mountains. It's a big deal.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Karine. Some really interesting points and advice there. Well, that's everything for today. So thank you very much, Karine, for joining me. And thank you for listening to ITR Voices. You can listen to this podcast again or other episodes anytime by going to the ITR website and finding the podcast tab.